Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie.
And I'm Sonia.
And welcome to Season 2 of the X-Men Animated Series.
Yay.
Yay is right. We got Season 1 done. Mm-hmm. That's 1/5.
Good times.
Good times. Last week, we had the pleasure of interviewing writers of the show, Eric and Julia Leewald.
Yeah, and they had a lot of really super interesting details for us about the making of the show, different plot lines that didn't happen that relate directly to this episode we're about to talk about.
That's right.
And some details about their upcoming book, so look out for that if you didn't know about
it. Yeah, they told us the title, which was, I don't know if it was like a real exclusive, but let's say it was. They said it's going to be called Previously on X-Men.
Right, which I love.
Yes, which we love too, because if you start any episode, especially on, if we're watching it on Hulu, they all start with the recap of the previous one.
Previously on X-Men.
Yeah. And there was some debate of whether or not that was Cyclops doing that voice, but write us in and let us know if you think it's Cyclops as well. Anyway,
we're starting off Season 2, kicking it off with Till Death Do Us Part, Part 1, which is the first episode.
Right, another two-parter.
Right, which fits right in with what, you know, what they were doing in the last season also, just really, like, serializing all these storylines and, you know, there's a lot of threads that start at the beginning and, like, run through all the way to the end of the season.
Yeah, that's and that's definitely the case with this episode. This episode lays a lot of groundwork for the entirety of Season 2, and the major plot lines don't really get resolved until the end of Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, kids at home, you better be paying attention, you know, to what you're watching.
Right.
Because you're going to be expected to remember a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the episode opens in a supremely awesome way. It's Wolverine in a tuxedo in a smoky room fighting Cyclops, of all people. And it's a really vicious fight.
Yeah. And like we touched on in some of the other episodes from Season 1, it's also an amazingly cinematic setup where it's like the room is like filled with this white billowing smoke, mm-hmm. and you just see like the blaze of Cyclops' lasers coming out of his eyes. Like, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. And Wolverine is really, like, psychologically damaged / enraged to the max in this scene. You know, because, you know, they're fighting, and then there's a quick cut to Scott and Jean, who are getting married.
Right.
Which we saw at the end of Season 1. Scott proposed to Jean, and she said, "Yes, I will marry you, Cyclops." Not Scott Summers. Which is kind of weird.
But he gets married as Scott Summers.
Yes, he does.
He's got his tuxedo on.
Yeah. A purple magenta-themed wedding.
Of course.
Yeah. they're all wearing, like, magenta, purple, like,
vests,
bow ties.
Under their suits,
right, and the bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Very apropos of the early to mid-90s. Well, really to this day, too, like, tacky wedding outfits. But whatever. But it turns out that Wolverine's not really fighting Cyclops. He's fighting a robot Cyclops in the Danger Room,
mm-hmm.
but which is nonetheless... which is no less psychological for Wolverine. He's like, "You can't have her!" And, you know, he's, like, stabbing the robot Cyclops.
Yeah, it's totally just a therapy session
for
him. Yeah,
it's, like, really wearing his emotions and psychological traumas on his sleeve, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny that the Danger Room can be programmed to emulate that.
Right, because...
like, a demented way.
Like, if I were him, I would really want that type of thing to be private, you know, but I guess like it is in the Danger Room.
I mean,
so whatever,
we see like Beast in the Danger Room later, and he's just doing a normal exercise with, you know, ropes and wires and things shooting at him. There's no like, it's not like, like
there's no holograms and stuff.
Holograms from Beast's life where he's being tormented or something and like laughing at him. You know?
Well, I guess it's a choose your own adventure type of.
Right. Yeah. So there's like this. So it's a cross between like the wedding of Scott and Jean at the mansion.
Mm-hmm. And then Beast working out his issues in the Danger Room.
No, not Beast. Wolverine.
Wolverine working out his issues in the Danger Room. And it's just, like, a really great opening sequence because it cuts back and forth between those two scenes. And it, like, takes a few cuts before you understand that they're both actually happening.
Yeah. And then at some point, like we said, like, Wolverine thrashes the robot Cyclops. But then the robot transforms into, like, this hybrid of Cyclops and a Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this 20-foot... version of Cyclops as a Sentinel, and Wolverine cuts its head off, but the Sentinel's still not dead. It's like the decapitated head shoots a laser, an optic blast at Wolverine, and he's just pounded in the corner.
Decimates his clothing.
Yeah, he's just being like, you know, irradiated by this optic blast. It's pretty violent. It's screwed up.
Yeah, and then like while it's happening to him, he's his like distress is so great that he's beaming these like psychic visions of himself
to Jean while she's being married.
Right.
How inconvenient.
And so she's like right in the middle of the ceremony, she just said I do, and like she gets this like message from him in her brain, and she's like, Wolverine? And
one of the top drawbacks to being a psychic is on your wedding day, you might intercept a lot of people. You really get to see what people are thinking at your wedding. Actually, is that like something as a bride you would want a power of?
No.
To read the minds of all your guests to see, like, I hate them.
Definitely not.
Right, yeah, you probably don't want to know what people are really thinking as they're, you know, like, smiling and clapping at you for being married, you know. Like, I'm sure most people are happy, but whatever. Anyway, that was funny. And so
we digress. But right. Then, like, Jean has to, like, go check on him.
Yeah.
Because she's worried about Wolverine because she just saw these, like, really violent images. And so she goes into the danger room where he's, like...
He's half naked.
Right, from all those
laser
blasts.
With all his muscles bulging, right.
And she's just like, oh, we missed you at the wedding, you know.
And like, he's like, Jean, I still love... No! And she cuts him off. And she's like, I gotta go. Cyclops is waiting for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, that is still unresolved, the love triangle, at least from Wolverine's point of view.
I don't think it's unresolved. I think Jean, like, makes it really clear. Like, she knows what Wolverine is about to say, and she, like, purposefully doesn't let him say it.
Because she doesn't want to close the book.
No,
she could just say, Wolverine, enough is enough. I'm married to Cyclops. You need to get over me. Instead, she just avoids the conversation and walks out, you know, like, scared.
I think that,
like,
is her way of closing the book.
I don't think so. I think in
that's
Wolverine's
her
eyes,
being like, we're done here.
I think in Wolverine's eyes, the book is still open and he still has a chance.
I don't know.
So, I don't know. I think, like, and we know that, like, technically he still might, because they're married not by a real priest, but by Morph, who, you know, surprise, is still alive. Left for dead in season one.
Right.
But turns out he's alive and he's seeking revenge. So he's starting off by invalidating Scott and Jean's wedding.
Why would he want to do that?
Well, he's most pissed at Cyclops. So at the beginning of season one, Morph was blasted by Sentinels after trying to save Wolverine's life, which was kind of foolish because Wolverine can't be killed by laser beams. Morph can, apparently. Or maybe not in this case.
Right.
And it's shown that Morph was saved by the villainous Mr. Sinister. For sort of unknown reasons. We don't know what Mr. Sinister's plan is yet. But Morph is resurrected, which also fits into the comic book Marvel Universe world where no one can really die.
You know,
people, death is but a temporary condition,
but
a minor setback. So Morph is brought back to life, and now he's out for revenge. And so, like, back to your question, like, he wants to start off with Cyclops, because Cyclops was kind of the one who left
Morph
behind.
I guess so. It just seems like such, like, a weird place to start. Like, it's not like he goes after him and attacks him. It's not like he does something like...
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just, it's devious, but, like, to what end?
Okay,
you know? It's
all
like, right. Ha-ha, your marriage is not valid. How annoying for you. You have to go down to the courthouse again.
I guess. But, you know, like, Morph, I mean, no, I'm sorry, not Morph. The writers of the show, Eric and Julie Leewald, who we spoke to last week, you should listen to that episode, they gave us an amazing behind-the-scenes plotline that was nixed by the Fox Kids executives at the time. And they wanted to have Jean get impregnated for season two and be pregnant during the whole season and have that being sort of part of the recurring drama.
Right.
But the Fox Kids executives are like, no, that's too mature for a kid's show.
Right.
We can't have a pregnant character because that implies that they had sex. And so...
Plus, she'll be, like, flying around in spandex, like, super pregnant, and that's, like...
I guess from the writer's point of view, like, they needed to invalidate the wedding so that they couldn't really have a quote-unquote wedding night. Where, but it's like, as a kid, I never, even as an eight or 9 year old kid, I still assume that if you were in a relationship, you were having sex, especially one that deep where you're about to get married. I didn't think that they were virgins.
Well, but then she also, in a later scene though, she says when she's like leaving the room from talking with Wolverine, she says like, okay, I have to be going now because Scott and I are catching a plane, which is like, you know,
right,
they're going on their honeymoon. And, like, it's whatever.
I know, but I think, like, in their minds, they're like, the wedding wasn't real. The writer's minds. The wedding wasn't real, so therefore they don't have sex. You know what I mean? Kind of thing.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Anyways, so...
No, because I think, like, that's why... people might be wondering, why doesn't Jean get pregnant then? I don't know. You're right. Who knows? Maybe they don't want kids.
I don't think people... Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be wondering that, but I'm just, like, wondering in, like, a highly moral world where... It's a show for kids, and you're talking about marriage. Like, maybe in, like, a kid's brain, like, oh, you get parents get married, and that, you know, that means that's where babies come from kind of thing.
I think we're talking, like,
we're like trying to like
I think
weave
yeah.
layers into things that are
like
kind
don't actually exist. Tons right. of people get married and then don't have kids for many years.
I know, but like I said, my only point about that is like a kid. I could see a kid might being confused.
I don't think a kid would think that far about this particular issue because
yeah,
there's
probably
like
not.
So much else going
didn't.
On in this episode.
yeah. Okay, fine. Let's move on. So. So Morph is alive. He's out for revenge, like we said. That's just one of the many elements introduced in this episode. On a side note, we see President Kelly. He gets elected president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we hear him, I, Robert Jefferson Kelly, do hereby swear to be president.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I thought that was funny. That his
Good
name,
old Bob Jeff.
Yeah, Bob Jeff. It's like, I just imagine people in the South voting for him. It's like, yeah, I vote for Bob Jeff. I don't like his how he changed his stance on mutants, but, you know, Bob Jeff, you can trust that man. So from here on out, he is Bob Jeff for me. Or Bobby Jeffy, maybe that's more... kind of like Ricky Bobby. So that's an element. And then we're introduced to I think the most interesting set of villains, especially for a kid show.
Yeah.
The Friends of Humanity.
Right.
Which are a group of disgruntled, like, KKK neo-Nazi-esque, like, a hate group.
Yeah.
You know, organized behind the idea of hatred of mutants. Like,
totally.
Violent hatred.
And I really like the political angle that they bring to this, like, first of all, with their choice of, like, focusing on Senator Kelly, right? Like,
okay.
Even from season one, I think that's really, like, realistic in terms of, like, the president, you know, is kind of an obvious choice. Like, every kid knows about the president,
right.
kind of, and what they do. But, like, senators are, like, a little bit of a deeper level of
yeah.
government
yeah,
for kids
yeah, definitely.
To, like, get
yeah.
into.
So they're learning about government.
Educational programming, you know? So, like, and I think that's cool because they, like, follow the same senator and, like, you see him, mm-hmm. like, advocating for issues,
yeah.
even if, like, whatever, they're not, like, great issues. But then he changes his stance and yeah. it's, like, the whole thing, like, really rings true to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know what rings true? It's, like, Senator Kelly was rescued in such a dramatic way.
Yeah.
And the credit for his rescue and his life so clearly belonged to the X-Men.
Right.
And so, and in that moment, we can assume, and we don't really show it, they don't really show it, but that Senator Kelly has a long talk with the X-Men, maybe on his flight back from being saved,
mm-hmm.
where they're like, listen, like, we're good mutants, we're out to fight, you know, this is why, you know, we rescued you even though you're against us because we believe in, like, peace and harmony. There's no way a person like that in going through that experience could not be changed. And it just makes me wonder that, like, I wonder if that's what it would take for a certain president in our real life. Maybe
a near-death experience.
Yeah, a near-death experience where he's saved by the very people that he,
opposes.
I mean, let's not get too political, but you know what I mean? It's like, maybe that's what it takes in this day and age to change someone's heart for the better.
Maybe, but...
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, I also... would just say that I really like the Friends of Humanity as,
you
like...
You like them? You would be in the Friends of Humanity?
Come if on. You... no, what I was going to say is that, like...
I mean, because they are, like, a diverse group of humans. It's, like, men, women of any ethnic group. They're just united by their humanity.
No.
So maybe
no.
that appeals to you if you hate mutants, you know?
No, what I was going to say is that I like them as the villains.
Oh, okay.
In... in,
I'm just teasing you.
In this show, because, like, again, it really rings true as, like, a group of people, and even, like, the way they name themselves,
yeah.
right? Like, you were just kind of making fun of, like, Friends and Humanity
right.
are both really, like, positive words in our lexicon,
yeah.
And like, I just feel like a hate group like that would probably name themselves something that seems innocuous
and
at
especially
like, first
one,
glance.
And it's not like they're the Ku Klux Klan or the, like, the neo-Nazis of America, you
right.
know, that are clearly just, you know, completely insane to the point of their iconography and imagery. Like, the Friends of Humanity are trying to be, like, a relevant political group, even though they're completely like neo-Nazis.
Right.
You know, I'm not, you know, don't get offended... Friends in France of this podcast, but a little bit sort of like that National Front movement in France with Le Pen kind of thing, where
yeah.
sort of like extreme hard right, you know, political views go mainstream a bit, but really there's something sinister lurking underneath.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that's what, you're right, and that's what the Friends of Humanity are. It's like this group that's, like, teetering on the edge of being, like, a straight-up violent hate group and, like, a serious political force.
Right.
And it's kind of scary and, like, really awesome, like, plot element
in
a children's show. And I love the way Professor X explains their existence. I mean, he summarizes a sort of political viewpoint that, you know, a lot of people agree with, including us.
Give us the quote there,
He says, "So often in our history, unhappy, misguided people have created scapegoats, blaming those that are different for the problems in their own lives." And he's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like...
That's like a perfect summation.
I mean, often if you, like, just, you know, are a bigoted racist person, you're usually masking and projecting, like, hatred of your own life onto another group of people, thinking that if you just get rid of them, all your problems, you know, will magically go away.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, if you believe that... And you're swept up in that kind of thinking, like, I can almost guarantee you're being sold a bill of goods, and that you really should stop and pause to think that, like, if all we had to do was just get rid of, you know, said group, the mutants, then I would have a job and my, you know, my failed marriage would be fixed and my kids would talk to me again. No. You know, it's like, they, you know, the mutants are not to blame for your life being a total piece of shit.
Yeah.
You know, look in the mirror, maybe. So Professor X is spot on with that analysis. And I love, like, a message like that in the show. You know, jives along with my thinking in life.
There you go.
So plus one for the X-Men.
Another educational programming point.
Yeah, but that's just one of the many, like, awesome, like, layers in this episode. Like, this is a really, like, intriguing episode that lays out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So including where, like, out of nowhere, Professor X gets a crazy message from Magneto, who sends him a video message where he's, like, in a burning building or something. And he's like, "Professor, terrible violence. I'm about to die. Come and save me immediately." And Professor X, who has, like, affection for Magneto as an old friend, rushes off.
Right.
Without the other X-Men. It's like, you'd think, like, maybe he'd want to take some X-Men on this mission to save Magneto.
Well, but he, like, calls it a personal mission and keeps it secret from the other X-Men,
that's kind
which is, like,
weird.
Really weird.
But Rogue calls him out on it. He's, you know, because, like, that happened a lot in season one, too.
Yeah.
But this time, Rogue is like, you know, the professor is getting awfully mysterious with his vanishing disappearance.
It just doesn't, like, make sense to me that this would be, like, a personal mission for him. Because the X-Men have been involved with Magneto
and Magneto's
before.
Dangerous. And
they,
has dangerous enemies.
Know that they have history and stuff. Anyway, but then we see what the X-Men don't see is that it's not really Magneto.
Oh, right.
It's actually Morph.
The first of many setups in this episode.
Actually, the second.
The second of many setups, right, because the first was the wedding was a setup.
Oh, wait, then the third, because the first was the wedding where the priest was actually Morph. The second was the Friends of Humanity, like, are secretly filming.
Oh, right. Well, I'm not sure what happened first or second, but whatever. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
So the X-Men are out at a bar. Well, Gambit, Wolverine, and Beast are. And this is, like, a really funny scene because they're playing pool, which turns out to be one of the X-Men's favorite games. We see them play pool quite a bit
in
many,
you know,
episodes.
They're casual 90s guys.
Well, pool has been around. It's not just about the 90s.
Yeah, I guess.
But so, and this is, like, a funny scene because it seems like a pretty mutant-friendly bar where Beast is just sitting around and this, like, lady is hitting on Beast, sort of.
It's the waitress, isn't it? With, like, the really thick, like, Bronx accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, "Don't I know you from television? You're famous. You know the president." And Beast is really embarrassed.
Yeah.
But Gambit is, like, trying to be Beast's wingman and get him laid.
Yeah.
He's like, "Go for it,
right,
Beast." He's like, "Yeah, he is. He's best friends with the president." And she's like, "Wow." But and then it's at that point that the Friends of Humanity attack this bar, and it's a setup, like you said, they've been tracking Beast. And so they all tangle in this big fight. And,
right,
you know, Beast is fighting them too. He's trying to quell the situation in a non-violent way. He takes one of their guns. But they're secretly filming a Beast with the gun, and then they film Beast, like, sort of mess up their car.
Right.
And then they submit that to the news lady.
It's, like, strategically edited to make it look like...
Look at this famous mutant that the president just pardoned. He's really violent and crazy.
Yeah,
like,
right,
this
exactly.
Is insane.
So that's,
like... It's actually pretty, like, messed up.
Yeah, so that's, like, the second trick. Then Magneto is the third trick.
Right.
And then...
the fourth trick is... and we're jumping ahead a little bit, but Morph... fourth setup. Morph infiltrates the X-Mansion, and the X-Men don't know he's alive, and he's, like, out to create chaos in the X-Mansion, too.
Right, which he succeeds at, like, right. really quickly.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, his specialty. Yeah. Speciality, you know? And so, yeah, so a lot of setups in this episode, and I love, you know, when Wolverine realizes this is all going on. It's one of his classic lines, "It's a setup." No, we've been set up. I just love when Wolverine has an epiphany. He's so, like, angry about it all the time.
I'd be angry, too.
Yeah.
Sucks to be set up.
I also liked in this fight with Gambit, like, he doesn't have his playing cards.
Yeah.
And we see him take a pool cue ball and charge it up. Mm-hmm. And to me, I was like, that's really interesting because...
Actually, the way he gets that pool ball,
yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but no. like it's on the floor, and we see Beast like pick it up
with his foot,
yeah,
like, and his, toss like, it at him.
Hand foot,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's got dexterous feet,
exactly, with his dexterous foot,
yeah.
And he like tosses it into his hand, and then he like throws it to Gambit. And I just thought it was funny that like the animators took the extra like couple of seconds to make that a thing.
Oh yeah,
like, instead
great.
Of Gambit just like finding it on the floor,
yeah.
You know,
well, but, we got to get Beast's pardon from prison, and you got to get him in the action now,
right? We got to show he's like the full extent underused. Of his like quirkiness and powers, yeah. and everything.
And it's you know, it's like to me. It's just interesting to see Gambit's powers because, you know, he normally uses the playing cards, which he charges with kinetic energy, and those explode pretty violently.
Yeah.
But that's a piece of paper. Now he's picking up, like, a cue ball, which is like a rock, more or less.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you would think that's, like 100 times more
right.
deadly
like
than
a
piece of paper. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really explode anymore. Maybe he can control how much energy he puts in it.
I don't know.
It's like that's just cool to see, and then like later we see him pick up like a huge heavy chain and swing it around his head.
Yeah, and that whole thing gets charged up and like yeah.
His powers are really on display in this episode, as we'll see in a bit
right.
too.
Which is cool because I feel like one of the strengths of the X-Men that you see in a lot of episodes is that they're resourceful. You know, like
yeah.
no matter what situation they're fighting in, they kind of like use their environment to
yeah.
their advantage.
And that's why their powers are so cool.
Right, exactly. And that's like what makes them really successful.
I think that's like a really appealing element to kids is just seeing them use their powers in different ways and
yeah.
in different environments and stuff. It's
right.
really exciting and creative. And you know, and speaking of this setup, you know, where they're at the setup Beast, I like that, you know, it shows how, like, racist the Friends of Humanity are when they're filming Beast, and the guy filming it, who's the leader of the Friends of Humanity, he's like, "The mutant has a gun!" You know, like, that's, like, so, like, such an old racist, like, standby comment, you know, like, in the real world.
Yeah.
Where it's like... It's like, can you imagine, you know, said person with a gun kind of thing? You know, it's like, how terrifying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I guess, like, not to get too deep into it, but just, like, the idea of people in, like, the super racist past of America having to get used to black police officers, maybe. You know, like that terrified a lot of white people at the time. It's like, you're going to give them... You know, I mean, it really goes back to the Civil War, where the Northern Army armed freed slaves or free blacks. And it's like, you're going to give black people guns?
Mm.
You know, like, oh my God, it's Armageddon kind of thing. So I like that they kind of, like... They introduce, like, that, like, real-world racist trope into this show. Like, it lends
like,
a lot of depth to, like,
right.
you know,
it's
like, what we're
like
talking
really
about.
It's done in, like, a really over-the-top way.
Yeah.
So, like, even kids that, like, don't
yeah.
have, like, that depth of knowledge about...
Well, I mean, what it is, it's like, I was probably introduced to it as a kid on X-Men.
Uh-huh.
But then as you grow older and you read about the past or watch other movies, more mature movies or more mature historical things, and talk about the things we just talked about... I'd think back to X-Men maybe and like, yeah, like,
yeah.
wow, like X-Men's like a super progressive show in that way, you know, and like you said, not really hitting you over the head, like done in like a subtle way, you know what I mean? Like that's just right. And so, you know, that's like, so that was like we said, one of the major setups, like this Friends of Humanity, they're off to their schemes. And then let's jump to Morph infiltrating the X-Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Morph... like we said before, wants revenge on the X-Men for leaving him to die. He's kind of tortured about it, and it's interesting to see that play out because, like, he's in some, like, cruddy, like motel room, like, wondering if he should actually go through with this plan to mess up the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him, like, he's got, like, an evil face.
Yeah, he's, like, green-tinged, and he's got those, like, purple bags under
yeah.
his eye,
and
like, all around
a
his
really
eyes.
Wicked smile on his face.
Yeah.
But that's not, like, both you and me kind of thought, like, oh, that's, like, Mr. Sinister, like, did something to his DNA or chemically manipulated him, mm-hmm. so that's why he looks like that. But it doesn't really seem to be the case, because he can transform back to his normal self mm-hmm. without the, like, face disfigurement.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just, like, a weird projection of his power that he has the evil face, too.
Or maybe the evil face is actually his face now.
Oh, right. But
and then, like, he can, like, morph himself back into, like, what yeah. he used to look like.
Yeah, I guess we would never really know if, like, yeah. he's been, like... We don't know what his, like, resting face is.
Yeah, exactly.
Morph resting face. So, but, you know, it also hints that, like, Morph is not, like, entirely evil now, that there's still some, like, the hero is still in him.
Maybe.
Right, maybe. But, like, he's conflicted, which makes him interesting.
Yeah.
And like we said, we don't know what Mr. Sinister's, like, motive is yet. So, but anyway, like, why is he, like, manipulating Morph? And yeah. why is he after the X-Men? Like, what does he care?
Right.
But anyway, so Morph goes to the X-Mansion. He... You know, his powers are really suited to messing with them.
Mm-hmm. And, well, also he knows them because right, he, like, yeah. lived and worked with them for a yes. long time. So he can really, like, do some damage there.
Yeah, so, the like, kind of the first thing he does is he pretends to be Rogue. And Gambit's hanging out with Jubilee. And he saunters in as Rogue. And he's kind of like, he's like, Jubilee, get lost. I need to talk to Gambit. And she's, like, winking at him, like, blowing him kisses, like, giving him, like, a kissy face. And Gambit's like, yeah, you run along and go play, Jubilee. And I really like this moment because Jubilee leaves and she's so pissed off. Because this is, like, not the first time it's happened. And she's like, it's like, run and go play. I hate them. Like, just, like, her impersonation of Gambit's really funny to me. It's yeah. really cute. And, yeah, I guess Gambit and Rogue are flirting all the time.
Right.
Anyway, and so she's, like, annoyed about that.
Yeah.
But, and I thought, like, watching this originally that... For some reason, I thought, like, oh, man, they're going to kiss in this scene.
Uh-huh.
Because Rogue Morph tells Gambit, like, oh, I can secretly control my powers. I just didn't want to tell you about it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, man, are they going to kiss? That'd be pretty crazy, you know?
Uh-huh.
If, like, it's because it'd kind of be like, you know, two men kissing each other.
Uh-huh.
But it turns out they don't kiss.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't make sense. Like, the whole thing is that, like, Morph as Rogue... says to Gambit, like, I'll be upstairs in the rec room, so meet me there in 5 minutes, you know? Because right. Morph knows that the real Rogue is up there, like, taking a nap in the rec room. So, like, the whole thing is that that Morph wants Gambit to actually kiss Rogue so that, like, his powers get absorbed by her.
Yes.
Right?
And that's what happens.
Like, right, which is exactly what happens. Like, the setup works.
And the setup is really funny because, like, the camera, like, finds the real Rogue sleeping on a couch. And it's, like, this slow, sexy pan of Rogue's body. And she's just all splayed out. Like,
right.
And Gambit sees this and his eyes, like, you know, like, widen.
Yeah.
He's like, maybe I'll wake you up with a kiss.
Right.
And he passes out immediately and she gets his powers.
Right. And she starts exploding stuff by accident.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, not used to controlling
yeah.
it. But
they really explain that Gambit can, like, turn anything into a weapon, which is kind of cool.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, this is, like, another minor point. Before Morph goes into the mansion, he makes this joke. He says, making copies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that's just...
Because he morphs himself into Storm and then Rogue.
Right.
Like, yeah.
But that's, like, a reference to, like, this very popular Rob Schneider SNL bit at the time.
Yeah.
Where he was, like, the copy boy. And he would just always say, making copies.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, a really stupid reference.
Right.
And the only reason it stuck out to me is because we're both big Parks and Rec fans. And that was, like, in an episode 2 where Adam Scott's character says that as well. And,
yeah.
And, like, all the, like, young people, like, have no idea what he's talking about.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. That's a reference from about a million years ago. He's like, I'm super old. So, I don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, it's funny that it's in this show anyway, though, because,
yeah.
like, kids are not watching SNL, probably.
I mean, I kind of... I think I got that reference.
Really?
Even as a young kid. Yeah, because that was,
because you've heard,
like,
other people say it.
Yeah.
But it's not like you were, like, awake
would go
at
around
midnight,
the,
like...
Yeah, you know, but some kids were, and, like, that would yeah. go around the playground. That was, like, something kids would really get, that
yeah.
kind of, like, dumb humor.
Okay.
There was yeah. nothing sophisticated about Rob Schneider's making
copies
guy.
No, not that it's
guy.
Sophisticated, but,
right.
like...
Yeah. It was just, like, right at a 12-year-old's, like, level.
Uh-huh.
So, Morph succeeds at creating all his chaos. Gambit's wiped out. And then Storm... And then he also... As Storm, he sends Jubilee on a very dangerous mission to infiltrate the Friends of Humanity. And Jubilee stupidly thinks that's a good idea.
Well, because she wants to be trusted because she was just kicked out.
She's tired of feeling like a kid.
Go play, little girl, you know, and now she's, like, got this important mission.
Right. And then she also, and then Storm and Rogue, the real ones, are also off on a mission to deal with the Friends of Humanity. And something happens where he pretends to be Beast and he communicates to Storm that, like, oh, I'll join you in a second because he's the backup. But it turns out the real Beast is in the danger room, like, just doing a workout. He doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
And Morph breaks into the danger room and he sets, like, the lever, like, the danger room, like, danger lever to, like, a million.
Yeah, the danger-o-meter.
Right, and so...
And you see it go, like, from low to medium to high.
Yeah.
And it just, I really like that animation, actually.
Yeah, me too.
It's
like
never,
a really,
like,
danger switch to
totally.
Be laying around so easily manipulable.
Well.
And that switch comes back in later episodes, by the way. That's the last we've seen of the danger-o-meter.
Yeah.
So Beast is in trouble, so he's, like, fighting for his life against, like, a...
All these robots and
lasers
and things.
Yeah, things shooting at him.
Yep.
And, you know, so the X-Men are, you know, they're in chaos, and they're pissed that Beast hasn't showed up. You know, Storm gets shot by some cops. Again, Morph is manipulated. He turns into cops, and a sergeant cop, and tells them all to shoot at Storm with full energy. And she gets shot a couple of times and falls from the sky. And it's actually, you know, they turn their guns to full energy, and she still doesn't die. So in the X-Men world, guns even at max blast are still not lethal, which is, you know, interesting just to note, to understand the parameters of, like what the limits are of this, of this universe. So, it, you know, things are bad. Jubilee gets kidnapped at the Friends of Humanity base because she thinks it's, like, a pro sort of mutant-like gathering.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I want to help the mutants. And they're like, oh, come right in. and then it's like it all kind of ends. So, like, things, like, end on a really bad note.
Right. And they've opened up, like, five storylines and not closed any of them. And, like, your kid brain is like, or even your adult brain is like, what's going to happen?
And it ends with Mr. Sinister. He's sort of the mastermind behind it all. We see him on, like, this weird, like, green throne of, like, green goopy ooze.
I thought it was, I don't know, like tree roots or something.
I mean, it might be, but he's like, his whole deal, Mr. Sinister's deal, is that he's like a genetic, like, manipulator.
Right.
And playing with DNA and making, like, gross stuff happen.
Yeah.
So I wonder, I don't
like
know.
Like his sharp pointy teeth.
Yeah. And so his whole appearance is, like, disturbing.
Yeah.
He's like this, I mean, he's a mutant himself. His backstory is super elaborate and weird. He's also, like, one of these mutants that can't really die or, like, has, like, lives forever.
Mm.
He's, like, hundreds of years old. He's like a I think, like, his backstory, without getting too deep into it, is like his scientist from Victorian times that figured out a way to live. I don't know. And, like, that's what transformed his skin and body to look the way it does. And he's got, like, a weird, like, backstory with Gambit. I mean, there's, like, a whole lot going on with Mr. Sinister, as we'll find out more going forward.
We'll see.
So, I mean, you know, like we said, like, this episode lays out a lot of stuff we're going to see in season two. Even though this is a two-parter and some of the stuff gets resolved in the next episode, really, like, nothing fully gets resolved. Like, it's going to play out throughout the whole episode. And season two is very interesting. There's a lot of great one-off episodes, a lot of great backstories into characters we know and love, you know. And I thought, like, my immediate assumption was that season two was going to be longer than season one. It actually turns out it's the same length. So another, like, tight, compact 13-episode arc.
Yep.
And then we saw, and then we looked ahead, like, season three actually has 25 episodes. So that one goes, like, way overboard.
That's the longest.
Yeah. That's when the show's, like, really a hit, I guess. They get a call for more episodes.
Yeah.
Season four is 15, and then season five kind of limps to the finish at 10. But, you know, so we're strapped in for another 13-episode extravaganza.
Yeah.
And it's looking pretty cool so far. It's like, you know, it's like the quality has certainly not dipped.
Yeah.
In fact, everything seems to really be hitting its stride.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot more intrigue, a lot more continuing plot points and interweaving characters and all sorts of fun stuff.
I'm excited.
Me too. Excited, you say.
But I'm
extraordinarily excited. Enough X pun. We're not that kind of podcast. at least I hope not. All right, so I mean, that's all I got. So, let's do some housekeeping. So, if you like the show, please subscribe to the show via iTunes or wherever you download podcasts. Mm-hmm. On iTunes, please raise 5 stars.
Tell your friends.
Write a nice review. That really helps the podcast get noticed.
Look for us on Facebook. Just search X-Men Tass Podcast.
Yeah, the X-Men Tass Podcast Facebook group. Please seek it out and join. You can talk to us. In the last episode, we interviewed those writers, and we asked the questions that people in the Facebook group asked them. So, you know, it pays to be a member, more or less. Those people got to communicate with the X-Men writers just like we did, fulfilling maybe some childhood dreams. So join our community. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And check out, what's the name of their website again?
Their website is xmentass.com.
xmentass.com.
Follow them on Twitter at xmentass.
Because they've got a lot of quality X-Men content for you.
Yeah. And follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. It's always fun to get more Twitter followers, and you can talk to me that way as well and maybe see what I look like, if you're curious. Seek us out there. Tell your friends. If anyone likes X-Men, let them know about this podcast. You know, the show's been growing week to week. It's really nice to see that. But, you know, we know there's a lot more people out there that would be interested. And it's up to you to spread the word. Yes. So that's all I got this week.
And we're looking forward to seeing what comes next week.
So come back for another exciting episode of the X-Men TASS Podcast.
You mean an extraordinary, exciting X-Men extravaganza?
Yep.
I'm done. I promise I'm done.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.